Given it was a prediction, typically on full sentences, full paragraphs, or whole text, it was never about whether we've seen this before. It's just whether this is similar enough to something which we've seen before.
Welcome to AI for Business Growth, the podcast from pioneering artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all business people, from startup entrepreneurs right through to Fortune 500 companies. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech to help you and your business to navigate through and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow businesses.
Today's show is about how to hire an intelligent agent to help you schedule your meetings effortlessly. So for the past 7 years or so, I have enjoyed having my meetings scheduled by my virtual assistant, Amy Ingram, whose initials, AI, give you some indication of what she's made from. All I ever needed to do was whenever someone requested a meeting, I would CC her in and say, Amy, can you schedule this? She would then email the people, sort out the time, the place, and it would just appear in my calendar. What often struck me, in fact, was the fact that clients would often say to me after a meeting, can you please thank Amy for scheduling this? My guest today is Dennis Mortensen, who is the inventor of Amy and the founder of X.AI. I'm so excited to meet you, Dennis, because I've interacted with Amy for so many years and now finally I get to meet her creator. So it's really exciting to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks much for having me.
You're welcome. So let's start a little bit about your background and how the whole creation of Amy came into being.
I'll give you the shorter version. Then you can call up my mom for the 4-hour version, which is very elaborate and probably kinder than it should be. I do think, like many entrepreneurial endeavors, that you should not really fall in love with the technology itself. You should try to kind of fall in love with some pain in the universe that you might think you could be able to remove with a little bit of effort. So the pain that we certainly spotted and one that I was intimately attached to myself as a CEO and founder of prior companies was the one which sounds very small and simple. This comes many times over during the week, during the month, during the quarter, during the year of trying to set up a meeting. And I was always too frugal, too stupid, too whatever, to go hire a human being. As in, $60,000, I could probably hire half an engineer. You know what? How about I just sit at home in my underwear at 10 p.m., schedule my own meetings, we get another kind of half engineer. So I did that for not years, but literally decades. And it always ended up coming back to my little idea list. As in, someday we should at least try to see if we could not kind of democratize access to the personal assistant. And footnote here, by the way, when we talk about scheduling meetings and when we did those traditional product management interviews where you try to kind of figure out, is this a personal fantasy of mine or is it really a true and honest pain in the universe? Everybody immediately agreed when you asked them, you don't really have to do much research. Do you like scheduled meetings? And the answer is immediately, no, I bloody hate it. I think there's no other version. There's nobody who comes out and say, you know what? I really like all day Wednesday. I sat and kind of managed my calendar. That's just not really something that happens. But what was perhaps somewhat surprising is that they all gravitated towards the same solution. Many times when you have the opportunity to say, what would you like? People go kind of bananas, as in they want all sorts of things on a map that starts to look like a scatter plot of sorts. But they all came back to some sort of fantasy of, you know what? If I make it, you win that corporate lottery. You become SVP, whatever. And all of a sudden you get Tom, who's now your assistant. That was the recurring fantasy of everybody, which is that I know what I want and I can describe it even in my poor Danish English grammar to some other human being. They will understand it and then go execute. Because all I know is, hey, I just want to meet with Suzanne first week of July. I've said what I think I need to say. Just make it happen, Tom. And given Tom is a human being, well, he can kind of figure that out with all of the kind of challenges, even though that sounds like a simple request. So that pain That was the one we got attached to. And it looked like, and here's the funny thing, footnote to footnote, as an entrepreneur, you always feel like, oh, we're way too late. I said, this has been solved. It's kind of like every year we think, I shouldn't go start working on self-driving cars. They kind of solved it. And then we're still 10 years early, right?
Yeah.
But in 2014, when we kind of brought the band back together, it felt like now is the time. We were probably a little early. And then brought the band back together, tried to see if we could kind of recreate or replicate the experience of having hired somebody at $60,000 who obviously do many other things.
Yeah.
But take their kind of slice or sliver of their work and say, that we might be able to go kind of craft an intelligent agent. So you go from whatever, 60 grand to 10 bucks. And it becomes not a luxury or something you aspire to, but really just a thing which you have. Just like many of the other software things you and me have, we don't really think of as magical anymore. As in, you'll open a spreadsheet in 2 hours from now and just assume, well, that's how you manage numbers. Where else would you go do that? Well, there was a time where that just didn't exist, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
That's how we got started. It was obviously, yeah, and I would use the word obviously because that is always the case. Any endeavor you get started on is so, you know, easy to kind of fall in love, and the whole thing is just super romantic until you kind of get into the weeds and it.
I can imagine.
We can talk about that because it was a half decade of,
wow,
on one part, technical struggles, and on the other hand, a set of social struggles that I certainly personally didn't immediately kind of anticipate, because we solved many of the kind of technical challenges. It was really one big ass data science problem, but
yeah,
social aspect was not as easy to solve. And we can talk about some of the kind of intricacies of having a machine do a human's job and what that does to people.
That's interesting, because the most people that I interacted with had no clue that she was a machine. So that was interesting. I just want to ask you, because I loved, in fact, the AI, you know, when her initials come up, it's quite cool. Was the fact that her surname is Ingram, would play as well on Ngram from NLP, or was that just a coincidence?
No, that's the geeky Easter egg for where if you do anything where you're trying to make some meaning of unstructured text, you're probably going to get exposed to an Ngram here and there. That'll be part of what kind of gets extracted from your tool belt. And we thought, hey, you know what? We'll have a laugh, another Diet Coke, and kind of get on with it. But that's how Amy and Andrew got started. Here's a funny stat for you, which kind of dazzled me in the end. Or two things, actually. We can go so deep in this kind of particular rabbit hole that we could spend all day talking about this. But almost all males would pick Amy, but almost all females would pick Andrew. As in, you would pick the somewhat opposite gender of yourself as your assistant.
Interesting.
I found that, I'm sure there's a study or research paper out there that will kind of give us a reason to why that is. That's the one part. The other part is we found come the very end that a lot of the kind of design that we put in place to humanize the agent, and we spent a lot of time and energy on that, sometimes worked against us. As in, what you just described were us kind of running 1,000 Turing tests a day.
Yeah.
And sometimes you win them, as in people didn't even recognize the fact that this was a machine kind of dialogue.
Yeah.
And in that kind of machine dialogue, having positively fooled them into believing that this is a human being can be satisfying from a kind of engineering point of view for a brief moment, but it actually worked against us. So in the end, we actually designed it in such a way for where we made sure in as many of the interactions we could, but even though we would write it, people wouldn't kind of compute the fact that this was a machine.
Yeah.
We would try to make sure you understand this is now a machine. Because if they understood it was a machine, they would interact differently.
Differently, okay.
And we introduced a third kind of agent. They all kind of did the same job, but under different names. So Amy and Andrew and Scheduler. So Scheduler is, by its name, at least suggesting I'm not a human being.
Yeah.
That alone, and if my memory doesn't play tricks on me, did a 3.6% increase in success rate. So we would measure the meeting success rate, obviously, from you putting in a request to that being on the calendar. It will never be 100% because there's all sorts of honest reasons for why a meeting won't happen. You get sick, my flight gets canceled, somebody couldn't come in, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Running at about 91% on average across the network. But that was interesting, which is that Scheduler did better than Amy and Andrew. I couldn't give up, that was probably silly, on the named agents. There's actually I'm sorry to go all bananas in here. There's a couple of studies out there for the geeks in the audience that you should kind of take a look at. They did a couple of papers on those stock trades where they had a perceived human being and perceived machine do the same set of trades, including a set of mistakes. And the willingness to forgive, as in they are, in the study at least, dealing with real money, so there's something at stake here, but the willingness to forgive was higher on the human side and lower on the machine side on the exact same set of actions. We found that as well, which is, I thought, so we would have, obviously, all sorts of human personal assistants that would arrive in our network, as in, I might use a machine, but I'm meeting up with somebody else who might use a human being, their PA or EA, and they would have, you know, a level of accuracy on whether that be response speed, ability to decipher time zones, or that there's only 4 hours between London and New York for those kind of couple of weeks over the summer where we don't kind of adjust at the same time, that some place they run a half-hour time zone, what the hell is that about? Some country kind of stopped doing summertime. Hey, that's kind of great. But they would have a level of accuracy. And I thought, we can just do as well and be on par with a human being. That is all we should aspire to. That was not the case. As soon as you introduce machines, human beings expect superhuman results. As in, they couldn't grasp the fact that, why is this not superhuman? Because it's a machine. And the funny thing is, this is turning into therapy for Dennis versus a
human.
But here's a funny thing. Machines make machine mistakes. And human makes human mistakes. And that sounds like, Dennis, now you're not even saying anything anymore. But it's actually an important distinction, which is that when you make a mistake, it's a mistake which I understand and I can empathize with. As in, I've probably done something similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, damn, you're right. Only 4 hours to London at this time of year.
Yeah.
It happens to the best of us. And you and me will meet again, even though one of us kind of missed the meeting. As in, no biggie. But machines make none of those. So time zones and similar, just to kind of stick on that particular kind of dimension, we would never make those mistakes. That is the easiest of things to kind of solve for. As in, you can just memorize 200 plus some countries, all the time zones and changes and what have you. That is not the problem. No, the problem is that the machines will make machine mistakes that you don't understand and you don't have, or many don't have the ability to empathize with. As in, why would you do this thing? And it would look so silly. I specifically said I could not do Tuesday because I'm doing this thing with my kid.
Yeah.
Why did you set it up on Tuesday? Well, the way you phrased it and the fact that you split the inability to do the meeting into one sentence and then later reference the kind of temporal part of Tuesday, we didn't connect the two. I see how a human being reading these will immediately come to that conclusion. But that was the type of thing
interesting.
They couldn't do.
Wow, that's so interesting. So earlier you said that about half a decade. Was that how long it took to get version one out the door? About 5 years?
No, that was the duration of the venture. So we spent about 6 years from No. Let's bloody do this, to us being acquired. So okay. That was the amount of time in the basement that we spent trying to make this work. We did have a whole host of distinct stages that we went through. The first one, simply just to confirm, and anybody who does anything that rhymes with startup should probably do the same, so we're not unique in that sense, get to some MVP that can at least prove that what you think is a pain is an agreeable pain amongst many other people.
Yeah.
So the very first version, and we can club these together, but there was actually two parts to it. I'll tell you, it's perhaps kind of funny. So the first version was just, not even version, but was me and my co-founder from my prior venture, who I thought, we're probably going to team up again. How about we create a new email address? And then I will be your assistant and you'll be my assistant. Because can we even, as reasonably smart human beings, do a good, you know, hours of work for each other? And does it feel nice to have this versus the, do you know many fantasies that you fall in love with as a fantasy? Then once you kind of achieve it, well, that fantasy wasn't really what I thought it would be. And it was just a fantasy. So we did that for about a month. And first of all, and pardon my friends, I hated it. As in, being Alex's assistant was the worst. But I loved him being my assistant. As in, oh, that was nice. It was nice for every single meeting. So that was certainly the first immediate validation that there's some sort of real joy that comes from going from no assistant to some assistant and doing it in natural language. And it didn't take any education from me. As in, I just, you know, 2 hours out of college, immediately understand, how should I speak to Alex so he can do this particular job? As it didn't require any training. I don't need to go through 20 years of whatever up at Time Inc. before I understand how I should do this. That was the one part. Then the next one was, okay, let's see if it might be that I just know Alex, so I can do this job because, well, we now work together for nearly 10 years. So perhaps it's not possible. Then I hired a couple of real EAs and said, hey, I'm going to find 50 of my friends who I know are in, you know, middle management, engineers, this and that, and I know for sure they don't have an assistant. And then you're going to work for them. And we'll see, since you don't know any of them, whether you can just do that job with the incoming text. Because if you can't do it, we can never create a machine that can do
it.
At least that seems very unlikely.
Yeah.
So had a set of EAs do that work, probably for 3 or 4 months, and it worked wonders. And what was even more interesting, we found very quickly that the job started becoming very kind of repetitive. Great, that's what you want to see.
Exactly, means, yeah.
Well, now we can probably build something around this. And that was that first kind of, at least validate there's something real here. Then the next version we did was a kind of more data collection phase for where, hey, let's not do any, we don't have any data we can make predictions on right now. Let's see if we can at least build up the some sort of incoming stream of data, meaning mostly requests. See if we can then kind of label those requests and then at least have a set of semi-templated kind of outputs. Can we make a little bit of order here? So we spent probably the first year working mostly on the kind of data annotation console, not the product itself, because there's just not really much data. And we tried. Here's an interesting footnote. You can go download the email data set from those, what was it, 130 some odd executives from Enron. Remember when they got added, all of that kind of came into the public domain. I think it's about 600, 700,000 emails. So at least you have something which you can kind of go work on. It just, we couldn't kind of mix.
Did you find that
there's... So we started learning ourselves.
Within that data set of asking, you know, people asking for a particular meeting, did you find that there's lots of different, like I always just say, Amy, schedule a meeting, but I guess there's lots of different ways you can use language to ask that. Did you find it was very varied the way people asked for a meeting to be scheduled?
The quick answer is yes. It's almost like Google searches for where, I'm not sure what the current metric is, but I believe on every given month, some 17% of all searches on Google are unique. And that just kind of blows my mind. I said, wow. Haven't we exhausted the amount of new unique questions we can ask Google? I said, how much is there? This was the same, which is that we did have some people like yourself who ended up gravitating towards the kind of more you just do it type request. And they just almost had it as a template. I did that myself. I had kind of a keyboard shortcut, like a text expander that I just kind of did two or three touches. It wrote a line and off to the races. Yeah. But that was not the case. What we did find though, was that it was really kind of four distinct challenges. One, an intent prediction. Mm-hmm. What set number of finite intents exist in this particular universe that I'm asked to kind of navigate? Because if I can't navigate the full universe, or if I have no understanding of how big that universe is, well, then I can never solve it. It's kind of like the self-driving car. There can be nothing which that car sees that you don't understand. If you don't understand it, how can you progress with confidence?
Yeah.
And we needed to be sure that we fully understood that small corner of the language universe that we existed in, meaning that you couldn't ask it. So when is the next Chelsea FC game? As in, we would have no idea what you're asking for. But if you asked for anything in the meeting scheduling universe, we would. So we try to hunt for that finite list. And when I talk about intents, I'm talking about new meeting, cancel meeting, add participant, running late, like I just did to you a few minutes ago. All of those intents, we need to be able to understand and predict. That was the one part. And then with three distinct entities. So temporal expressions, date and time, obviously, locations, and people. If you can understand those and you know the intent, well, then you're in good form. And then we started just labeling the hell out of this. That was everything you look at looks like the biggest surprise, but certainly a way bigger task than we had imagined and way more costly than we had imagined.
Yeah.
In the end, we had about 100 people full-time, 24/7, doing nothing but label data. Just the scale of collecting enough data to be able to do predictions of a high enough accuracy. And just to give you, again, now I'm going all geek on you. So we had a labeling manual. It sounds like, oh, I'm going to give you four highlighters and a piece of paper because you just mentioned four things. And whenever I see a time or a date, you give it the kind of yellow highlighter. I think the temporal expressions kind of education for the data labelers or AI trainers, we kind of titled them, were about 36 pages alone just for temporal expressions. So your ability to just go label Wednesday 2 o'clock, that required 36 pages of good understanding. And that suggests that the labels probably can't even label it correctly. So now you probably have to kind of do all sorts of kind of double, triple labeling, golden data sets and all sorts of things. So a major endeavor, but very interesting.
Wow. And so as people kept using Amy, did you keep the data on the way, the things, how they were interacting with her and kept using that to keep building your data set?
So you have this kind of very wonderful feedback loop for where the more meetings you do, the more accurate the agent becomes.
Of course,
so you can build it around that. When we talk about keeping the data, it is not the dialogue itself. It is all the little snippets. It's the way you said, let's get together later next week. We'll do it after that. After what? Or let's meet up first thing tomorrow, but you said it at 1 a.m. You probably need today, but yeah. It's a very human thing to use the word tomorrow all the way up yeah. to you go to bed, even though tomorrow already arrived. So it was all those little snippets, of course, yeah. the labels themselves that we would keep, and that just had an ever-increasing positive effect on the accuracy of the agent.
Wow, that's really interesting. Because did you also find, like if you think about, you mentioned Google driverless cars earlier, I remember reading somewhere that when they're on the streets, often other cars, usually driven by teenage boys, will start driving towards them to just test them and see what they will do. Did you ever find anyone doing that with Amy or Andrew, just doing random things just to test, do or not?
Yes. And we actually worked very hard to see that not happen. First of all, because it will at least initially pollute our data set, which is,
yeah.
it is us seeing unnatural behavior
yeah.
By design. And people have all sorts of things. Let's meet at the moon. Let's do this. Let's do that. To see if they can kind of fool the engine into doing something, which is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah.
Where if you had a human assistant, I would never try to play tricks on them. But there's actually a very fine line. There's another study, again, for the geeks amongst the audience. Where was it? I think actually there's a summary of it in the New York Times for those who want to do a search on it, for where they've seen a change in the behavior of younger children after the kind of devices like Alexa across from me arrived, because there's no penalty. In real life, there's typically a penalty. As in, another kid on the playground, they'll push back. Or they will tell you to your face what they think of your looks. Not so much with Alexa.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. Actually, so much so that, again, perhaps it was around the same time or shortly thereafter, there's actually a set of features. I know in Alexa, I'm not sure whether they actually kept them around, that does introduce the idea of some penalty, meaning that if you become like overly rude, it actually does not do the command which you asked it to do, which I good. Like.
Yeah,
it, it, is not the, it doesn't matter for you and me, but yeah. it matters if your kid does 48 requests every single day, that somehow we need to make sure that there's a positive feedback loop here. So we saw it all the time. And tried very hard to kind of guard against it and suggest you do not do this. One of the best ways to guard against it was to move away from the kind of very natural looking emails that we initially did. We did just straight ASCII response, like you and me would respond to an email a little bit later, right? Yeah, sure, we can do later this week. I'm busy Thursday, but after two on Friday, about half an hour, should we do soon? Question mark. Like just
yeah,
a text. We did that as well, but that string of text, however kind of natural it looked, just immediately invited, as you said, the teenage boy version to go bananas.
Yeah.
If you add a little bit of design and templated backdrop, that actually removed a lot of it, because that kind of broke the idea of this is going to be, it's not fun to poke the template. It's fun to poke the human-like machine. So that was one of the best kind of defense mechanisms.
That's really interesting. And how did she handle, if she was asked something in a different new way, how did she handle requests that she hadn't experienced before?
So it's all really a set of predictions with a level of accuracy.
Okay.
And we choose where we are willing to believe our prediction. If it goes above, well, we believe there's a high enough probability that what we think is about to happen next, based on what was said prior, is the right thing to do. And if it's below, we either seek, further input, as in a way of surrendering. I didn't understand, but there's many kind of clever design techniques you can use to say other things than I don't understand. But we simply just have thresholds for most things. And given it was a prediction, typically on full sentences, full paragraphs, or whole text. It was never about whether we've seen this before. It's just whether this is similar enough So something which we've seen before together with the other parameters that we collected. So
interesting.
No two emails were never, you know.
I did, yeah. It was all about the intent and the language. Interesting. Mm-hmm. What about non-English? Does she handle other languages?
So here's, initially, she did not.
Yeah.
In the end, which I was actually very proud of, now that we've been acquired, which we can talk about, the acquirer have decided not to keep the agents alive, because really what we did was, there's kind of two parts to it. There's the kind of, we can use the self-driving car again as a good analogy. There's the part for where I need to be able to see the world for what it is. And if I see the world for what it is, then I need some sort of engine to know what's the next action. Mm-hmm. We live in the same universe, which is that I need to kind of understand what was being asked of me to do or what was the response to something which I sent out. And if I understand that, then I need to know what actions do I take. That scheduling engine, that was primarily what the acquired, not the ability to understand what was around us, because they take that in different ways.
Yeah.
That kind of died as part of it. And you should never fall in love with something that can't love you back. But hey, but parking that, that's just the therapy session for Dennis here. What we found, and this, we actually wrote a very long kind of semi-paper on this, was that there's the idea that I need to understand, of course, the request that comes in, but really what happens, if you think about it, that's not exactly how it works, but it's close enough, is that I immediately translate this from English into scheduling language.
Mm-hmm.
And that scheduling language is actually what we make predictions on. And that was interesting. And that actually meant that the text itself that arrived didn't need to be super proper. We just needed to be able to do a good translation from any language into scheduling language.
Mm.
And that was funny, because that meant we could actually do really okay, not great, machine translations. And you've seen machine translations, right? Mm. You see some article in Italian, and it's something which you really care about, and you use Google Translate, and you can feel that this is probably not exactly how they intended this to be phrased, but it's good enough, you're just gonna get the gist of it, as in,
yeah,
the article, right? Some news article and something going on that I care about. But it's not like if some human being had translated it. We certainly get ever closer. But we found that we could actually just do that. And when we looked at the text, we were kind of disappointed across the board. Like, sure, for some of the major languages, but then all of a sudden, it doesn't do great in Hungarian or Finnish or something else.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't matter. Because we turned all of these kind of incoming requests, translated that into another language, and then did the immediate translation from that kind of poor version into scheduled language. And that was highly accurate. So we actually ended up doing about 56 languages.
Wow.
Where you could ask it, and I did it sometimes, mostly just for the fun of it, so people could see that it worked, my request in Danish, because I speak Danish, right?
Yeah.
And it was very nice to see how well it did. And it did actually quite well, even on mixed languages. Because most of the people I communicate with over here, I'll do the first part in English. Then to be kind of borderline arrogant, technical arrogant, I'll do the rest in Danish. So, hey, let me dazzle you a little bit. So I'll do that. And then we end up with this. What part is English? What part is Danish? This is really just a sentence. Is it something else? But it worked very well. So 56 languages is what we ended up on.
56, wow.
Yeah. Yes. We didn't get, so that was the input language. We didn't get to do the output language, because that is design, right? That is what you receive. And that needs to be, because I'm sending that to your guests, that needs to be proper. So we didn't get to that part, but that was really more of a just cost decision at that moment in time, not a kind of difficult kind of data science challenge.
Interesting. So Amy and Andrew are really an example of vertical AI, right? So it's like one job, which is scheduling meetings. Do you think that as we progress, as someone who's seen the horrors of how much is involved in creating that, do you think it will continue more to stay in like these silos of vertical AI, or do you think the Amy and Andrews of the world will progress into taking on more and more roles horizontally? Or do you think that's just such a big ask?
I'm just finding it still hard to believe that out comes some sort of press release from some Google-is type company that says, ta-da, we solved it. Ask it to do any job and we'll do that job for you. I can see how it'll become, you know, ever smarter on taking some text input and provide some answer to it. But there's a difference between a question and answer universe and that of doing a job that many times require multiple turns back and forth and heavy integrations into other systems. Mm-hmm. So I actually execute on the very job, which is that I don't want an answer. I said, if I ask you to book a meeting for me, don't tell me when I'm free. I know when I'm free. I want you to book the meeting. So it's not that you understood my request and you can kind of map that to my availability and somehow tell me next Thursday one is good. Yeah, then do it. That's why I asked you. So I'm still yet kind of unable. I can see surely that the vertical agents will become fatter over time, being able to do more things. But I still see this version of the future for where you have these, you know, vertical AI agents, highly specialized, able to do one thing, but do that one thing very, very well. Mm. And then what starts to happen is that the vertical agents will start to communicate with each other, which is that I might have a travel agent, a reimbursement agent.
Interesting. That's an interesting thought.
And then I schedule a meeting with you, and the scheduling agent surely knows where I live. Since it booked the meeting with you, it can see the location is not anywhere near to me. Since it's not anywhere near to me, it might have the rights to go and ask my travel agent, who also happens to be a machine, and say, hey, when can Dennis be in London in July? And it'll come back with a set of responses. It'll use the responses to kind of have the dialogue with you. We'll find a date. It'll go back to the travel agent and say, hey, we found a date. Yeah. You then book those tickets. It booked those tickets. Then the travel agent has the rights to go out to your ERP or reimbursement agent and say, hey, I spent some money on Dennis's behalf, but it's a company trip. We need that reimbursed.
Yeah.
Get a confirmation on that. So I can see how there'll be a kind of cascading set of dialogues
between
agents.
These different ones.
More likely versus the all-knowing single entity that can do anything which we imagine.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't think of that. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense to have all these different verticals that have an interconnected network that can work together. That's very interesting.
Kind of how we work in many
ways. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not an expert on everything. That's why I have a lot of colleagues and they do what they're specialized in.
Yeah, that's so true. That's really interesting. Now, you were recently acquired by Bizabo. Is that how you pronounce it? Bizabo?
Bizabo. Make it true.
So now that you have been acquired, what does that mean for Amy and her army of devoted followers?
It meant for the army of devoted followers. And it's actually, sometimes you create a product for where the product is surely good, honest, of value. People are paying you money for it. Everybody is good. But they might not be in love. Like, we had a good project management tool. It was called Clubhouse. I think it's called Shortcut now. They rebranded. Doesn't matter. I liked it. I was not in love. But I liked it. As in, we used it every single day to kind of plan out all the things you planned out to kind of do proper project management. What we found, though, on Amy and Andrew, scheduler in the end, was that those who fell in love fell hard. Like, like they became strong advocates, defenders even.
As in, evangelists, yes.
And it was I've done four prior ventures, and I would like to believe I've done some good product, had happy customers and good exits. This, though, was different, like real connections between product and user. And it turned out to be the single largest acquisition channel, our own customers, who would introduce it to their guests. And that's where we actually acquired most of our next customers. So it was just very nice to see. But the acquirer, as I said before, of all the things that we engineered over the years, the one part they would like to acquire, and again, if you get acquired, you're usually, by definition, acquired by somebody bigger than yourself, meaning that you'll have the small amount of revenue and whatever you put into the shared pool might mean less. So they're probably not acquiring you for money, or that's less likely. Yeah. Sometimes they'll acquire you for people, technology, IP, patents, something kind of similar. And for us, it was the scheduling engine, that understanding of, give us some input, it'll give you a really good answer on what to do next. And they are in the event space. So Amazon Career Day, a million people turn up trying to figure out how we get a job at Amazon, and they need to kind of meet with recruiters amongst each other and what have you, and they wanted to use that engine for that. So that meant Amy and Andrew, died.
Retired.
Retired, that's better, retired. And in that, of course, we had to kind of sunset those users, and that was that. But very happy about the whole kind of outcome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been an amazing journey, and really in such a short time period that you've actually created that amazing capability within them and have exited. So congratulations on the whole thing. I mean, I love Amy, love Andrew. I tended to use Amy more. I had both actually, but I used Amy more because I started
the exception. I think a lot of early users, because we initially, that was a flaw in my own thinking, only had Amy, and then shortly thereafter, perhaps half a year in, Andrew. But people who got stuck on one agent didn't abandon that particular agent.
I started. I was beta testing.
Flip-flop. They were kind of
more. Yeah, I started. I think I was on the beta test before you were officially. So it was a long time, quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. I just find the whole story really fascinating, and you'll have to come up with a new one for us.
Oh, yes. Now, step one, make sure that we get well integrated, the acquirer is happy, and then see if I can sell Vibeke out here on yet another venture. I'll keep you posted on that.
Yes, please do. It's amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today, and I look forward to seeing your next venture.
Time well spent. Cheers.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Business Growth with Dr. Andre Bates. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your business, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating wherever you download your podcasts. For more information on the subjects covered in this episode, links mentioned during the conversation, or to connect with Dr. Andre, click the link in the show notes now. Plus, make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.